Welcome to The Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. On this episode, we're reviewing Promising Young Woman, Soul, and then we'll dive into Wonder Woman, spoiler-free, and then spoilery. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today, my fellow host, John Davenport.
Hey, Aaron. Have I had a chance to talk to you about our Lord and Savior, Godzilla?
You have not. But I do know he will be in theaters and on HBO Max in the same day if Legendary gets their big paycheck. Why, do you ask?
It's an important time of year in which we have to celebrate our Lord. And, you know, it's important to remember the spirit of Christmas.
Christmas is over, man. It's like it's done. This year is done, too.
The spirit of after Christmas, you know, that dead zone in between Christmas and New Year's where you still get to relax a little bit, but you're dreading New Year's because, you know, you have to go back to work, that whole thing.
You've been on vacation for far too long.
Not long enough.
It's always not long enough. And Amanda Sink.
Hello, hello.
Yeah, we're doing this. And you know what? This episode is only three movies we're talking about. Those three I talked about. Promising Young Woman, Troy Heinrichs is going to join me for a review of Soul, which will pop into the... You guys don't have to worry. Okay, I didn't tell them beforehand. You guys don't have to worry.
Yeah, I was actually a little worried there. I was like,
huh. I know. I was like, who's supposed to be leading this? I didn't miss an email, did I?
You should be ready for anything at any minute. You know what I'm saying?
With you? Yes, we probably should.
You should.
Yeah. I just take it as a go.
Oh, yeah?
Like some people say Patty Jenkins did with the screenplay. What? Mm-hmm. Just take it as a go.
No! Yeah. That's so mean.
Let's get to Wonder Woman. They got some stuff to talk about, including maybe assault. We'll get there when we get there. I do want to mention before we get into the reviews, is there anything you guys have watched that's new to you over the break that you want to mention real quick before we get into this?
No.
A lot for me, none for Johnny, apparently. I am like on season 4 of Orphan Black. Holy
crap.
Oh, that's
a great show.
I love this show. And Tatiana Maslany is like, I liked her already to begin with from other stuff she's done. But like seeing the way that she can portray so many different characters and they all feel like they are actually separate individuals acting them out is just crazy. So that's an amazing
heard this
show.
Before.
Is it on Amazon Prime?
It is on Amazon Prime. Probably from you, John.
Yeah, probably from you on the show like 3 years ago. But yeah, she's caught
150 times probably. And that's why she's one of my favorite actresses is Tatiana Maslany.
Yeah, she... Well, did I tell you that I got to see her? You know, Bag of South by Southwest? Anyway, so then the other thing that I watched was...
Did you see her or see her?
I saw her. She was like probably... 8 feet away from me.
Oh.
Yeah, that security would have been called on me. I'm pretty sure she's small enough that I can just pick up and run with.
She was with her boyfriend at the time, so.
I'm pretty sure I can knock him over, pick her up, and run with her. That's all.
She is very tiny. You could probably do that. But then the other thing I saw was this Tom Hanks movie, Greyhound, which is on Apple Plus. Don't worry. I stole the subscription. It's not mine. I don't pay for it.
If you want to pay for a service, you can pay for it. I just...
No, I'm saying I don't want to, and I don't want people to think that I do. But it was actually a really good movie. It is... a historical war movie, and it's set similar to how 1917 is in just like a one shot, like one day. And it's about this Navy crew that is just trying to get their convoys past these U-boats that just keep slamming them. And it's just really all about survival. And I was really impressed by the story of it just because it's not something that I would typically go for, but of course it's Tom Hanks at the helm, and it made it so there is a lot of Navy terms in here, but I could at least pick up context of what it meant. So if you're someone who is a military fan, you'll probably really enjoy this because it made me feel like I was really there with them and the tension was fantastic.
Yeah, one thing I love about this is that Amanda reached out to me and said, hey, I saw Greyhound. Have you seen it yet? like, nope, I don't have Apple TV. I'm not subscribing. And then she's like, well, you would really like it because you were in the Navy. I'm like, oh, guess what? When you're out of the Navy, the last thing you want to do is go back. So, but no, I've heard great things about that movie. So that's good to hear.
Yeah, it was really good. So that's the stuff that I've been watching.
I've been going back and watching a whole lot of other stuff that make me feel special and happy. Like I did do a wind up to Wonder Woman, and I rewatched BVS, and I rewatched Justice League, and then I got into a hole with continuing that stream. I watched Shazam again and watched basically the DC universe. I just dove into before Wonder Woman.
A lot of people will cut you for this, John. I just hope you're not allowed to like them.
Hello,
you can't.
Yeah, you know what? They can come see me at my house, and I'll tell them how I feel about that.
Oh, John has gotten like some fiery sass in him over his vacation days. I like it.
I just had a conversation with somebody where they were asking what my top five DCEU movies were, and I said Batman vs. Superman Ultimate Cut is in my top five. It's number five, but it's in there of the DCEU movies. And they are actually DC movies, so that includes Superman and Dark Knight and whatnot. And they basically said that I obviously don't appreciate film. And I'm like, well, thanks for telling me. I've been wasting
that to you.
Yeah. And I'm like, well, I've been wasting my time on this podcast for like a decade. What the hell?
Oh my God.
Thanks, man. Thanks for the heads up.
Yeah.
Is this like somebody who's like a really deep film buff, or are they just really into DC?
It's somebody who thinks they know everything about comic book films, and therefore all of the Snyder films are trash. It's one of those
guys. Sure hope they listen to this podcast.
I hope they don't.
You can tell them I said they are trash. That's okay.
Now I hope they do.
Now you should send them a link to it. Hey, we did coverage on Wonder Woman. You should take a listen.
Yes. Guess what? We liked it. It's okay.
It's fine.
Oh, see? Now we've got somebody on your side.
Oh,
doubters.
Boy.
Doubters, we'll get back
haters.
To
haters.
No, I just said it's fine. The fact that we liked it is fine.
Oh, okay. I thought you were saying just the movie was like, it's fine.
Well, we're getting a little ahead of ourselves, but yes, it's it's starting to sound a little bit like we, you know. Can we go back to the show now, please?
Yeah,
we're giving spoilers about our feelings.
I'm just letting you know, apparently Wonder Woman 1984 is the new The Last Jedi. That's what I found out on the internet. I'm like, how did this happen?
Did it suck that bad? No.
Apparently the internet said, half of the internet said so.
I have thoughts on why people feel that.
I'm sure you do.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. John, you might just want to go back on vacation and come back. Yeah,
no, 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 no. I have a reason for why people have.
Okay.
Of course you do.
Let's wait. Let's get there.
Guys.
We got three movies to get to. We'll get to the first two, then Wonder Woman. So the first one is Promising Young Woman. I saw it. Amanda, take it away.
I didn't.
I really wanted to, but I did not either. So nothing in Cassie's life is what it appears to be. She's wickedly smart, tantalizingly cunning, and she's living a secret double life by night. Now, an unexpected encounter is about to give Cassie a chance to right the wrongs from past. Aaron, this stars Carey Mulligan, who I would say has done a lot of elegant work. She's been in some like classy films. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I immediately think of her for a double life, a secret double life action kind of star. How did you feel about her performance, and did it seem natural?
Well, first up, I do want to say, you mean because it's not like Great Gatsby and stuff like that? It's not as portrayed by the trailers in many respects. There's not an overindulgence in murder going on. It's not like a straight up, it's not that kind of revenge.
It's not like Atomic Blonde or MFA.
No, because I really thought it was going to be like MFA, which got me really excited because, you know, that's one of my favorite movies of the last few years. So I was pretty stoked that it was going to be like that. And it was not. It's actually a really interesting, nuanced, completely different take than I expected. And I'm not going to spoil like big parts of the movie because there's a lot of things I could.
Don't you threaten us. Don't you threaten us.
Well, what I'm saying is, that there's a lot to it. And in fact, the ending will blow your mind in one way or another. But I won't spoil those things. What I will tell you is that it's not about her killing people or anything like that. What she's doing is she is pretending to be drunk so, quote unquote, nice guys will take her home. And she can teach them a lesson in her own way, which I won't explain what her way is. But she will teach.
Sounds like MFA.
It does a little bit. but it goes a different way. And she's basically teaching them a lesson about the ones that have the opportunity to do the right thing but choose to do the wrong thing. She teaches them a valuable lesson in life, but I won't explain how she does it. And it's not murder, though. It's something else. And that's what's interesting. And it, but she's a really broken person because of what has happened, a tragedy that has happened in her life between her and her best friend.
So the director at the helm of this movie is Emerald Fennell, who is the was the showrunner for the second season of Killing Eve, a show that this podcast really loves. Do we have any of those vibes coming into this? I mean, I know you said it's not necessarily an action, but there's a lot of quippy humor in Killing Eve and just really immersive scenes and characters. Do we feel something similar to that show?
Yeah, it's funny because I didn't realize she ran the second season until after the movie. And I could totally see Jodie Comer doing this role. I mean, it's very, I don't want to say it's similar, but it's reminiscent of Villanelle in a way because of her humor. She's got very dark humor. She doesn't really play the game that, that so many others play. She doesn't want to be part of the dating pool. And, you know, she's not, she's really has a disassociation with people at this point. She really struggles with everyday humanity because of the tragedies that have happened to her and her friend. So it I can definitely see that. Yes, I can definitely see a Killing Eve vibe, but it's very much its own thing. But the humor is dark, very, very dark. The very end is so dark.
So it sounds like she is obviously the centerpiece of this, but we still have a pretty great cast along with it. There's Bo Burnham, there's Alison Brie, there's McLovin, Adam Brody, and Max Greenfield. Do they play an integral part to it, or are they more just sideline characters?
I would say they are more very supporting characters. It's really the whole film revolves around Carrie Mulligan and her attempt to kind of set her mind right as Cassie and to get a resolution that feels right to her for the characters that were involved in what happens. And I'm trying really hard to dance around that line of what happened to her, because it was as a dark tragedy. You can probably guess kind of what happened, but it definitely goes a different way than you think it did.
Now, this, some people may already have expectations based on the trailer or kind of the way that you're selling it.
They are wrong. They are wrong.
Is there anybody this movie is not for, or this movie is specifically for, without spoiling anything?
I mean, if you're looking for romantic comedy, not for you. If you're looking for a family film, not for you. If you're looking for joy, probably not for you. But if you are, if you're somebody who likes very, like I use nuance, it's very nuanced. If you really look at films for character-driven pieces or something where it's really about the mind of the character and how fractured it is and how the events that took place can completely change. Because she was a doctor. She was a doctor in training. She was going to med school and everything else. And then her life was unraveled because of what happens. And it's a nice character study of how a mind breaks and why it breaks. And then how hard it is to put the pieces back together and how others that tend to be more involved in what happens in those events seem to pick themselves up just fine. So it's an interesting study in, I don't want to say mental illness, but dealing with tragedy, dealing with trauma.
Ah, interesting. Mm-hmm. So I'll definitely be checking this out.
You will like it. You will feel very passionate walking out. I promise you. It's a love it or hate it kind of ending, too.
Okay. So if the full price of admission were $10, which you saw it in theaters, so maybe it were, what would you give Promising Young Woman?
I would give it $7. Yeah, it's a
pretty solid score.
It's a really well-done film, but it's completely different. Not completely, but it's very different from what you saw in the trailer. So if you go in and you're like, murder, death, kill, calm down. Different kind of movie. All right, now we are going to move into a review that was pre-recorded, so Troy is not sticking around. Don't panic.
Oh, thank God.
With my co-host from the Blacklist Exposed podcast, Troy Heinrichs, where we talk about Disney Plus's Soul. Here it is.
That's a joke. That means we're not going to be here for 4 hours.
Wow.
Does it?
I'm leaving that in.
Said by me. Yep.
The irony is thick.
I know. Hey, I have concise thoughts, okay? Sometimes. Rarely. It's a new year. I'm turning a new leaf.
We could have already been on Wonder Woman. Are you sure?
It's a big ass leaf.
Okay, now we're going to move on to Soul, which is available on Disney Plus right now and was originally supposed to go to theaters, but Disney decided, no, we're going to put it on Disney Plus so families across the world can see Soul themselves without having to venture out to a theater. And unlike the Wonder Woman HBO Max deal, it is not available in theaters as well. It is only on Disney Plus. I am joined for this one by my The Blacklist Exposed podcast co-host, Troy Heinrichs.
I thought you were going to introduce me more as the Pixar snob.
You are kind of the Pixar snob, which is why I brought you on for this one, because John and Amanda did not even want to watch it.
Oh, really?
And well, they had other stuff going on. I mean, Amanda was trying to watch Cobra Kai to get that review ready, and John was, I don't know what John was doing, but I'm sure it was very important.
I'm literally shocked right now that John wouldn't have watched this, given his art background, because you would think that the animated films is something that he would be the most interested in because of that profession.
Well, why don't you write him a sternly worded letter?
I'm probably going to get a sternly worded letter now because I called it animated. Because I'm sure this isn't animated. It's a CGI.
Yeah. Well, I mean, isn't it the same now? I mean, it's just the new form of animation now.
Oh, no. I'm sure there's some cantankerous 50-plus-year-old, you know, out there that's just like, no, animation is with pencils and crayons.
I can attest as I get closer to it, all 50-year-olds are cantankerous. Except for Jamie Foxx, apparently. He's still one of the most upbeat guys you could ever find.
Not in the first half of this movie, though.
Well, I mean, as a person. I've seen in interview after interview, this guy has more energy and positivity than most actors you find.
We still live in real life. I thought we were always in fantasy land when it comes to movies and TV.
There aren't many actors I follow beyond the screens, but he's one of them. He's just one of those guys where I just find him endlessly entertaining. Really do. And Power, by the way. Power from earlier this year, that was a fun movie too.
Now, I think he did a great job in this one. It was really a fresh take, I think, on Jamie's, you know, persona, to see him play this like music teacher turned, you know, jazz player at night, and then it just goes to all kind of crazy places as the movie progresses.
Absolutely. And it's Project Power. That's the movie I was trying to think of. Project Power.
I was like, when you said Power, I was thinking Powder in my head for some reason. I don't know why.
Totally different movie. Although that would be fun to see Jamie Foxx do that character because he's great in everything. Great. All right. So Soul is about Joe Gardner, who's a middle school band teacher whose life hasn't quite gone the way he expected. He is passionate about jazz. He loves music. Everything he talks about, sees, visualizes, imagines, everything revolves around music. And he's very good at it. What he wants to do, what he's always wanted to do, is the same thing his father wanted to do, which was be a musician, be part of a band, be part of the culture, be just live in the moment and the music of the moment. But unfortunately, it doesn't work out for him as well as he hopes. You know, he's basically, in his mind, relegated to the position of a music teacher, not what he wants to do. But what happens is he finally gets the opportunity of a lifetime to perform with a real band and be a pianist in a real jazz band, huge jazz band. He's excited. He's thrilled. He can't wait. And then he dies. He falls in a pothole and dies. But when he travels to this other realm, what he finds is that he has to assist another soul with their passion. Even though he's trying to get back to his passion, he also finds himself having to help another passion, another soul's passion, and that's 22, played by Tina Fey. So Joe Gardner's played by Jamie Foxx, Tina Fey plays 22, and they're kind of a duo of sorts as the film goes on. Now, Troy, you love Pixar movies, but before we get into Soul, can you tell me why you typically love Pixar? Because most people, especially adults, I don't think tend to lean toward animated films anymore, as much as they used to.
I want to say it started out with, you know, just the Toy Story movies were so fascinating when they came out back in the late 90s, and then to watch the Pixar story kind of unfold on how, you know, Steve Jobs jumped in and it's like this computer that was usually formerly part of Lucas, and just the whole story of Pixar just is so fascinating when you sit back and watch how it all unfolds and the things that they're able to bring to life within the concept of computers and animation and tying the two together to make it look so real. And it's when I watch these movies, I'm literally looking for, okay, like, what's the new thing that they did this time? You know, when we look at what they're able to bring to the table. And I'm going to tell you, the saxophone in this movie, mm-hmm. I thought that was a damn real saxophone. It was so shiny and was so perfect. I literally thought she was holding a real saxophone. They did a really great, intricate, detailed job on the saxophone specifically. And just the, in this case, I think this is, if I'm not, I mean, they did a little bit of City Life with Inside Out, as, you know, she's walking, you know, to and from school and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this is the first time where the city itself was a character in a movie, and they really brought the sights and sounds of New York to life as they went through this picture. And I thought that was a really bold stroke from the Pixar folks as well, just to get the, I mean, it felt like you were in New York, the weaving in and out of the traffic and the local neighborhood feel and the shops on the counter and the, you know, sitting on the steps in the apartment building. It felt like New York life. And I thought that was a really great job by Pixar to put that level of detail into the finer pieces of this, since the other finer pieces weren't so, you know, majestically thought out. Pretty as hell, but maybe not so majestically thought out.
Yeah, before we get to the actual plot, let's talk about the animation since you brought it up, because that was a large distraction for me. You went from a very engaging opening, in my opinion. I was really involved in the storytelling as it went along by the animation. I just thought the characters were captivated. They were fascinatingly captured, because I do think that they really made Joe stand out from an animation standpoint. And then you get to where he dies and he goes to the afterlife or the great beyond, or he's trying to head to the great beyond. And I didn't like that very much. And I know it's very abstract and it's supposed to be, and it's meant, because this film is very much centered around adults, if you ask me. I mean, it can be a family film, but it really feels like an adult story. And that whole section really took me out of it for a bit. Did you feel the same way, or am I just being an old curmudgeon?
No. I'm trying to figure out if it was because, and then Aaron's going to jump on me all about this, right? Because like, the dog was barking, the kids were getting up and down to get snacks, and I'm like, just sit down and watch the freaking movie. So see, maybe that was
why you
like,
gotta go to the theater. They're forced to shut up.
So they were, maybe they were taking me out of it a little bit, but I did feel the first, you know, 30 to 40 minutes of this film, I was like, oh no, Pixar, what did you do? This is not going well. And I was kind of bored, actually, in mm-hmm. parts. And that for the opening was great. You know, I have to establish everything. Even in the opening, I felt like I saw 90% of that between the trailers and the promotional material. So even that felt a little boring. I love the theme of the movie, though, which is, you know, don't talk on the phone, text, because then you'd be looking down and you'd see the manhole cover.
True. So back to that question. I definitely think the
afterlife sequence was not super well done. It was beautiful, and I literally turned to my wife and I was like, man, I wish I was on drugs right now, because maybe this would be better.
So you don't think it's so much the animation, because I kind of got caught up. I'm like, the animation just doesn't feel like it's part of the same movie. Your issue is more of how the story was evolving. Like, it just didn't tell the story strongly.
Well, I think the visuals of the afterlife were so brilliantly done, and I just couldn't get over how trippy it was, that it was distracting almost. Like, this was almost Pixar going, look at us, we're so awesome that we're just going to throw the entire color gamut and everything that we can do at the wall and put it in this sequence. That it was almost like a little bit of hubris was showing, I think, in that sequence. And as a Pixar fan, I kind of felt that, and it took me out of the film.
Maybe that's what it was. I really felt
too
like
much
it was
attention to it.
I felt like it was Picasso. Like, they were trying to do Picasso. I understand that, but it was so off-putting, I guess. Maybe it's because I didn't expect it that dramatically. I mean, I had seen only half of one trailer. I did not watch the whole trailer, because I just like to discover Pixar movies for myself. I don't want the whole thing spoiled for me, and trailers typically do that. And once it hit that point, I was just like, I get what you're going for. I just don't know if it's working for me. I feel like you're trying, like you said, a little too hard at putting their finger on the pulse and saying, we're Pixar, look what we can do. It's how I felt. Like, it felt pretentious, I guess, in a way.
Yeah, and then they have these characters. They're literally line constructs, and they basically mm-hmm. make up the entire afterlife, and have names of Jerry and Terry in this film. Not giving anything away. And
that joke got very old.
Very old, very quick. Yes. And I think that was part of the issue, too. It's like, it's the afterlife. Why are you trying to give God, for lack of a better term, a figure? Like, you could have just done it with a booming voice of some kind that just talked about it. Because, like, the whole point of the animation was to watch the souls themselves, the little blue creatures you see in the trailer.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I was expecting to see. And I saw a lot of them in this afterlife sequence, but to introduce this third construct, I think the third construct just did not work at all. The Jerrys and Terrys.
Yeah, I didn't either. Okay, so that's my one major complaint. But after that, what we get is Joe continuously will not stop jumping back into his body, no matter how many times he's plucked back out of it, which I admired. I mean, I kind of liked what they were going for, which is this guy's not quitting on his dreams. He's not quitting on himself, you know, yada, yada, yada. And then he ends up kind of banding with another soul. You want to talk about that story point? Like, what did you like this mix where he's basically partnered up with 22, Tina Fey? I
mean, it's a little bit, what do you want to call it? Lilo and Stitch callback in a way. Like 22 is the Stitch and Joe's the Lilo. And they kind of form this like bond as a family together as they kind of go through the movie. So there was a little bit of a callback there. So it wasn't like it was anything like fantastically new from a Pixar movie story-wise. I think what Tina Fey and Jamie are able to do with their voices for these characters, especially when you understand what happens in the movie when they finally do go back to Earth, I think that their bond together makes the movie work for just their voice acting, because you can feel them being in these characters as Joe and Joe's counterpart when they are back on Earth. And I think that works really well. I think the challenge was getting to that point, because there's a lot of, what do you want to say, telling instead of showing in that first 30 to 45 minutes. And you're just like, oh my gosh, I can totally see where this movie is going like every step of the way. And because of that, it's just kind of like, eh, yeah. And then when the big twist happens, you're just like, okay, that's some funny stuff. Like, let's see where this goes. And then you're like back in, and then you want to go for the ride to see how it all plays out, even though it's very much a Lilo and Stitch, Little Mermaid, fish out of water kind of concept.
Yeah. And you get, it's very much Joe and his cat are taken over by 22 and Joe's soul himself. And there's some comedy that results in how that works out, which I don't want to, you know, give too much away in case you haven't seen the film, but I'm guessing if you're listening, you probably have. And regardless, the movie evolves into Joe trying to understand or realize his passions in life, which are music and teaching, which I don't think he really appreciated the teaching aspect of it until the film evolves. And I just kind of want to ask you, in terms of themes, right? What would you say are the one or two major themes you took away from Soul when you walked out of it, when you finished the movie?
I think the major themes are, you know, number one, in 2020 specifically, I think this was a appreciate what you have and appreciate life for what it is, because you only get one. And I think that was kind of the heavy hit over the head theme.
And do you feel like that one worked? Stop. We'll go to the next, whatever your next one is.
Yeah,
after that,
I did. I really, as the movie goes from the midpoint to the end, I felt more like the Pixar I expected. Mm-hmm. And I just went for the ride. And there's one beautifully shot scene on a stoop in New York where you're just like, oh my gosh, I feel it coming, like get the tissues. and then of course the way it ends, you're definitely like, you know, Tissue City again. Like, I don't know what happens with these movies, but every time I cry, my son picks on me all the time because he's like apparently a brick wall.
You should probably get him checked out.
I would. No, I think that the you got one life to live. Let's go ahead and make the most of it and appreciate everything that is here. I think that theme definitely works for the end of the movie. The second theme, I think, would be like just mentorship or friendship. The people that you can influence in your life as you go along, I think that's what leaves your mark on the world. So in order for people to, I think the movie's quote is like, find your spark. So when you go through and you're like, if you can help people find their spark, it's also like giving you a spark as well. And I think that played off as well too.
Yeah, I did too. And actually I would probably add to it a little bit. One thing that I took out of the movie by the time it was over, and I agree with you, the first, I would say probably 45 minutes are a bit clunky, especially that whole afterlife bit. Like, as the afterlife continues as part of the movie, I think it works better and it kind of becomes more ingrained with the storytelling. It's just that first section really didn't work for me personally. But as it goes on, the theme that really expanded to me was this idea that you can dream and you should always, you know, go for your dreams and people should support you in your pursuit of your dreams. But none of that will matter if you don't already feel comfortable with yourself.
Right.
And that to me is the one that really just like kept punching me in the face. And I don't mean that like it was a, you know, hammer on a nail, like it was just too blunt. I really feel like it was subtle. It was a very important theme that I don't think really gets talked about in many movies, which is, you know, usually when you see somebody who's aspiring to be a dreamer or achieve their dreams, it's always like once they get it, you're like, yeah, they made it. Or it's all about the struggle to get there. Nobody ever stops to talk about how it's more important that you already feel comfortable in your own shoes. Otherwise, what's it matter? And that's a real important aspect, I think, to the dreamer scenario that doesn't get talked about. And Soul does a very good job, especially the second half of painting that picture, I thought.
And I think there's a part of the afterlife sequence specifically that helps that exactly come forward called the zone. And then when you see it, you'll understand why. But I think that's absolutely true. Like when you're there, you can be in two places. You can be like in a euphoric state, or you can be in a completely depressive state. And I think they really do a good job visually showcasing how people travel through life and try to figure that crap out, because it's hard sometimes.
It can be. And how do you feel now that you watch Soul? And do you feel like this is more of an adult movie than it is a kid's movie? I mean, usually Pixar kind of blends it very well. I feel like this is almost exclusively aimed at adults.
Yeah, I felt like it was very much a speak to adults and speak to the kids. That's probably why the afterlife sequence seems so out of place, because that was clearly put in there for the kid audience than it was for the adult audience, for sure.
All right, absolutely. Interesting, fascinating. And the cast was great.
The cast was amazing. I mean, everybody was perfect in the roles. Especially like Angela Bassett playing the sax player.
Oh,
like,
Dorothy.
When her voice comes on, great. It's like, you know, it's Angela Bassett right away. And I was like, oh, that's such a great role for her. I'd like to see her play this in real life. That's what I like to see in these Pixar movies, is who can play these roles if it was a real life role. And she totally fit that role 100%.
Well, one thing I found was even more prominent was, I mean, yes, the voice cast is phenomenal. I love Jamie Foxx and everything. Tina Fey is great and everything. It's just like the cast, and you go down the line, like it is a fantastic cast.
Graham Norton was even great. He was funny.
Yeah, Graham Norton. I mean, he's just genuinely a great guy to listen to. But one thing I loved is how they made, you talked about the city being a character, but how they made music a character. I mean, sometimes I forget how music can play a part in our lives. And I really felt like this was a nice reminder that music is art, you know, I mean, and yes, we should already know that, but there's just something about the way that the music is presented in this that kind of gives it a feel of its own and its own character and its own depth, which I thought was really, really soulful and important to the movie.
Well, I think the big thing that people don't understand is that this music is actually done by Nine Inch Nails. Trent Reznor.
Yeah, that was a big switch.
It was like when you find out, like, that was Trent Reznor? Holy crap. And then you read more about Trent Reznor overall. Did you know that he has literally won every single award but a Tony? So, and I could actually see this specific movie, honestly, being very much converted into some kind of a Broadway musical. And then if Trent could do it, he could win the Tony, and then he'd have like the, whatever you call it, the perfecta of every award in the book.
The EGOT.
Emmy, Oscar.
The EGOT. Yep.
EGOT, EGOT. Yeah.
And Atticus Ross, too, he did it with Atticus Ross, yeah. So I don't want to leave Atticus out.
No, the music was really, really good. And one thing that I thought was kind of cool as I was watching it, and maybe this was just me picking up being a kind of a music nerd myself. I love the soundtrack show. If you've ever, being a movie fan, not to plug somebody else's podcast, but if you've never heard the soundtrack show with W.W. Collins, it's fascinating stuff. But the little ramp that goes to the great beyond, the light, if you will, it looked like the neck of a guitar.
Yeah,
with the guitar riffs. Mm-hmm. I thought they were going for the piano at first because it was like black and white, but it wasn't quite the piano keys. But it definitely looked like a guitar. We call it the neck of the guitar.
Yeah, there's music infused throughout the entire film.
For
it's,
sure,
it's really well done. All right, so if $10 full price of admission, what do you give Soul?
I think I gave some other ones. I mean, I like this movie more and more every day I go away from the movie itself. So I've thought about it more. I've sat with it more. So I think it comes in at a solid 7.
Okay. And I'm going to give it 6 because I do feel like that first 45 minutes is very clunky and I was bored. And you should never be bored in an animated film, like, because there's so many things happening. And so the voices are just wonderful and everything else. There was no reason for me to be bored in that film. And I was just the initial portion, I was bored, but it definitely picked up.
Maybe this is a question. If you would compare this to, I would say, because it's been, I don't know if this is like the second year, or maybe there's been a couple of years where Pixar's released two movies in the same year, right? Because 2020 seems like a blur, but I swear Onward also came out this year, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Yes, that was a whiff for me.
I mean, it was fun, but it wasn't a great movie by any means. Mm-hmm. But it was the same concept when we had, oh my gosh, the year Good Dinosaur came out. We had like the main Pixar movie in June, and then Good Dinosaur kind of came out at Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And I felt Good Dinosaur was very much more of an adult-themed. It definitely wasn't for your average four-year-old, for sure. It was very scary in a lot of parts. But maybe
to Troy.
Yeah. Do you feel like this is like the same concept as a Good Dinosaur, where there's like fans that would love Good Dinosaur would probably love this movie, but people that didn't like Good Dinosaur wouldn't like this movie?
I don't know. I really feel like this was more aligned to just an adult audience. I mean, I kind of get what you're saying, but this feels to me like the most adult themed Pixar movie across the board. I just really feel like the concepts and the thematic material is really, really based around adult material about, you know, your believing in yourself and dreams and life and, you know, confronting your mortality and also a predominantly black cast, which should not be unnoted, because doesn't happen very often in animated films. So that's great too. And as well as black culture is part of the film. I think all of those things are it's a very adult oriented film, and it is family friendly. I'm not saying, because there are definitely hijinks and talking animals, everything else that Pixar is known for. It's just across the board to me, when I finished it, I really felt like they were not trying to make a kids movie this time. They were really trying to say, let's see if we can do a CGI animated film that's really just for adults. So I wouldn't even compare it to Good Dinosaur. I would say it stands on its own as a very adult film.
Yeah, I would say this would be like, if you were to call it a PG-13 movie, it's not because it's a PG-13 rating, but it's a 13 and up film. It's not a, not a, you know, 6-7-year-old put it on and let people watch it and just enjoy it. It's not Ratatouille by any stretch of the imagination.
It's definitely worth a watch though.
For sure. Adults absolutely should watch it.
All right, people, we are going to Wonder Woman. Well, how we're going to do this is we are going to have some spoilery thoughts, but there are people that want to know what we thought. I don't know why, but they want to know what we thought without being spoiled because they haven't seen it. Guess what? It's available on HBO Max. You don't have to leave your house. That's what some people love about it. Or you can go to theaters, or it's on video on demand in certain countries. So it's available. But we want to talk about it spoiler-free first, and then we'll jump into the specifics. So we'll be very quick with the spoiler-free portion, though. But we want to tell you basically what it's about. You get to go to the 1980s. Roughly 1984, I'm guessing, right? Yeah, you're right. And we follow Diana once again as she adjusts to life as both a hero and an everyday working woman. And her adventure this time follows her as she finds a stone, or actually her counterpart finds a stone called the Dream Stone. And what this stone does is it can make wishes come true. And certain wishes bring about certain things. Can't say what they will be or what they won't be. But we also meet different characters, and they're villainesque, I would say. Max Lord, who's played by Pedro Pascal, and the Cheetah, she will be known as the Cheetah. Her name is Barbara, and she's played by Kristen Wiig. Now, that's pretty much the plot of Wonder Woman 1984. Oh, yeah. And Steve Trevor comes back in a way you can probably ascertain from the description. But I didn't spoil it. I'm sure you can figure it out, though. Is that a spoiler? I don't think so. Is it?
Whatever. He's in the trailer.
He is in the trailer.
He's in every trailer. They're not hiding him. So here's what I want to know before we get into our spoilers and what we thought and like the real details, the meat of Wonder Woman 1984. Take us through overall what you thought when you walked out of seeing it. And Amanda and I both saw it in a theater. I think both IMAX, right?
Yes. Okay. We were in the same theater, Aaron.
All right. Well, I'm just trying to make it sound.
We just didn't sit together.
I'm trying to make it subversive. We were in the same city, same theater.
Yeah.
And John saw it at home because John doesn't like leaving his house.
No, I don't.
Not in Florida.
It's hot.
I get it.
All the time. All the time.
It's actually really nice right now.
Well, then you should probably leave your house, right?
That's why he hasn't been watching movies.
You know what? I would have liked to have left my house today, but I'm stuck doing this.
That hurts, man. All right, John, fine. What did you think? Spoiler free. We'll get into the details in a second. But overall, the movie, what did you think?
So overall, the way I felt about this movie is the acting was fun. The actual actors on the screen were always are always fun to see. The actors they added to the story did add elements that are all their own and made the whole experience enjoyable. The story was okay. It was a little tropey and a little headachey in parts here and there, but overall, I had a lot of fun watching it, and I had a lot of smiles, and it was a great way to separate Wonder Woman from the din of superhero movies by how they handled the overall ending. Thumbs up. And I did see it at home, and it was actually a great experience because one of my Christmas presents this year was a phenomenal sound system. So I had the windows and doors open so we can cool off the house and just blasted the movie out to the neighborhood, and that was great.
Well, I had a few different experiences throughout the movie. A lot of Gal Gadot is the most beautiful person in the entire world. I'm sure everybody feels the same way. But I thought the movie was special. I enjoyed it a lot. I left the theater happy. I mean, I know that there are some cheesy parts to the film, and it's not a perfect film. And I'm okay with that because, to be quite frank, there are very, very few movies that are perfect. And any time that we have with Chris Pine and Gal Gadot on screen, I'm not going to complain about, you know, too much. Although I did complain about the last Wonder Woman movie, so I guess it's not true.
I was going to say.
But it was a lot of fun, and it was colorful, and I liked the direction the story, the message of the story took. And I know it's something that a lot of people are complaining about, but I just don't have that complaint, and I'll talk about it in the spoilers.
Okay, well, I will say that, man, I watched it in IMAX, nowhere near Amanda, nowhere near, and I enjoyed it. I really thoroughly enjoy it. And actually, my best friend and his wife came with. He had never seen Wonder Woman before. He's not a big movie guy. They watched it the night before they came. And again, they're not big movie fans. Like, they don't go to movies very often. And they had a great time. My wife was a diehard Wonder Woman fan. She had an absolute blast. She loved it. She didn't love it as much as the first movie, but she loved it. And I get home very high off Wonder Woman. I'm like, that was really, really fun. I mean, the action, I thought the action was fun. I love the truck chase, which is, if it's not an homage to Raiders of the Lost Ark, I don't understand how it's not, because it's very similar in many aspects. Whatever. Love that. There's a couple issues I have in terms of the whole dream stone thing. But if you can accept Thanos and his magic glove, I don't really understand the argument.
Yes! Thank you so much for saying the words.
I just don't get it. That's too easy. Oh, really? Because this whole world destructive glove isn't too easy?
They had five or six of them.
It's like, shut up. It's so ridiculous. So I really enjoyed it. I came home, but after I saw it, that's when I started reading comments and tweets. And I got to stop staying on the internet. I'll tell you that. I'm tired of that. And it's so negative. So I'm like, well, maybe I was still drunk. I don't know. I mean, you know, Christmas was a good day, so it's possible. And then I rewatched it on HBO Max. That was the one advantage. And there's actually a scene that I missed that was huge in the movie, and I technically spoiled it, but I cut that part out. You never heard me. And I missed it because I had to go get popcorn because I was so excited that I actually got a refill for once for popcorn. And I got to come home and see it on HBO Max. So that part was nice. Like, I didn't miss anything. I literally got to see it all. And I was still, after the second time, I really had a few issues, same issues I had. I didn't feel much different about it. Other than to say that if you're trying to tell me that watching at home compared to the theater, I beg to differ, because I did it on the same day and you are drunk. You may prefer it, but you're drunk. All right. Now, here's what I want to do. I want to do our scores up front, and then we're going in the spoiler session. So if $10 is the full price of admission, what did you end up giving Wonder Woman? 1984. Amanda?
Oh, me first?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, because I was stuck between two scores. I'm going to go with 750.
All right, John?
I'm going 650.
All right, and I am going 650.
Wow, I liked it a lot more than you guys.
No.
No. You liked it much differently than we did.
There you go. Look at this guy throwing out stuff. Throwing out themes and all kinds of other things I don't understand in life. All right, so let's go into our spoilery thoughts. If you have not seen Wonder Woman 1984 or you do not want to be spoiled, stop the podcast now. It was great having you, and we hope you have a lovely day. Boom. Done.
Bye.
1984. We are into it. So we are not caring if you have seen the movie or not. We just assume you have. John.
Aaron.
The choice to take place in 1984. Ultimately, did you enjoy it? And did the 80s really matter in the end?
I don't feel like the 80s really mattered in the end. As far as how much I enjoyed it, I thought it was cute here and there. But ultimately, I was ready to be back in as far away from 1984 as possible, especially when the parachute pants were being talked about. I was just not in. Like that was a mistake once. I didn't need to relive it again.
So you didn't really think that was a good choice?
I don't think it's as important as some people might think. You can actually put that story at any sort of time period and it will still work.
Okay. All right. What about you, Amanda?
Yeah, I mean, I think for the most part, I agree with John. I do think that setting it in a time period where, you know, it's not further advanced in terms of technology makes it a little bit more believable, and it makes it easier to understand how all of this could happen because there's not the reliant, you know, they're not relying on technology for everything and communicating things. And I liked the, I don't know, the juxtaposition of Wonder Woman having to teach Steve about her time period that she's at in 84 when he did the same thing for her when she entered the world during World War One. So, I mean, that I think was nice, but
that
again,
fish out of water thing, that whole fish out of water, like.
Yeah, yeah, where you don't understand things. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's really where the 80s came into play was it was just fun little throwbacks, but it wasn't overwhelming. And this is something that I expected to go into it. I went into it expecting it to be like tons of 80s songs,
yep,
and so just like ridiculous hair. And none of it was over the top, which makes it timeless. And I think that's important because you wouldn't want to go, I don't know, like 10 years from now and look back at it and be like, was this in the 80s? Like, no, this movie was made in 2020. So that part was nice, but you still had the appreciation for the 80s. And so for me, it worked. But it's not, you could have done it in the 70s too, to be honest.
Actually, I want to adjust my answer a little bit because the thing that I realized just after listening to this is that the 80s is the era of the excess, and it was peak excess 1984. Yeah. And for the story to work, it actually only makes sense for it to take place in 1984 because, yeah, that was when we were peak excess.
That's kind of where my point was, I know some people have thought Pedro Pascal's character, Max Lord, is way over the top and he's too maniacal and everything else. And I will say, if you go and you find context where Patty Jenkins is talking about making the movie, she wanted it to feel like it was a movie that was actually made in the 80s. That was her goal. And if you really watched any of the movies from the 80s, that's how the villains were. They all were crazy like that. They were batshit nuts. And they were maniacal. It was part of the stigma of the 80s. Excess was everywhere. There's a reason why they call it 80s excess. So to me, I didn't feel like the nostalgia was popping left and right. And so what I thought was the best part about that was that we didn't have tons of 80s songs. And we didn't have like all the stuff we get on Stranger Things and everything else that's been nostalgic over the last 5-10 years or whatever. It just feels like too much 80s. And instead, what they did, I thought it was very low key. Instead, they made a film that felt like it came from the 80s in terms of a lot of it, you know, in terms of the villains, in terms of the things you would have happened should Wonder Woman have been made in 1984. And I feel like that's being missed a lot. I really do. Like in a lot of conversation, I'm not hearing much of that. And I'm like, that feels like what they were doing to me, a big portion of it.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think that, well, I also believe that because the vast majority of people are watching this from home and they're not able to have the same experience and disconnect from their technology, I guarantee you almost everybody picked up their phone at least once.
Oh.
You know, their lights were on. There was something that it's not the same as a theater experience. I guarantee you, because I did the same thing as Aaron. I watched it when I got home too, because I wanted to relive it and see, you know, do I feel differently watching it at home? And I did. I was less engaged with the movie because I was sitting at home. I felt like I could be distracted and I wasn't picking up on all of the things that I picked up on while I was at the theater. And I know that's a personal thing and everybody can be different, but when we're talking about millions of people, mm-hmm. I guarantee you many of them would have been in that same situation, just didn't have the theater experience. So I don't think a lot of people really keyed in on what we're talking about, in that this is, yes, there are villains that are extreme and crazy and like the outfits are 80s without being like purple and pink everywhere, you know, neon colors and stuff. But it felt very authentic, but I didn't feel forced into, you know, another time period. It wasn't a time period piece. You know what I mean?
It did what I needed it to do. There's a thing where when they set things in a previous time period, especially the 80s, they tend to go too far to where it's constantly taking me out of the actual movie. This didn't do that. Instead of constantly playing Bananarama, they're instead actually, you know, just playing the music that would have played in any other movie that was made in the 80s. And it's just the 80s happened to be, it's set in that time period, but it's not like the whole time setting is a character that keeps knocking you in the face. It's still a Wonder Woman movie. And that's how I felt. And I was really, really content with that. I thought that was a good choice. And you're talking about the distraction thing. I told you guys about this. I won't name names. So if you're listening, I'm not naming your name. But a friend had told me that they really didn't care for it. They were bored in the movie. And I'm like, all right. And then they asked me, like, how did Steve Trevor come back? And I'm like, well, that wasn't answered in the first 15 minutes. Well, I must have been, you know, must not have cared. If it's 15 minutes and you're already checking out, my guess is you're probably on your phone. So that shows to me one more reason why watching a movie for many people at home is different than watching it in a theater. And I do think that plays a part in this because a lot of people are easily distracted at home. So for a movie like this where it's generating constant conversation, it affects it.
I also wonder how, you know, and I don't really want to bring this up, but I'm going to anyway. I wonder how the year of the COVID pandemic with so much negativity this year has been. It's been horrible. Like, don't get me wrong. Yes, it's been horrible. But I think that's affected people's perspectives on a lot of things where you know, like 2020 is the year you want to escape from. And so I don't know that a lot of people had optimism going into the movie as well.
I mean, it's possible.
I wonder, I guess, is more what I should say rather than, you know, that it is a fact. I wonder how that plays into it in terms of perception. Because if I go into a movie and I'm in a bad mood, I know for a fact it's going to affect my perception of it.
I think this is a personal opinion. I think it's more expectations. The people that I've talked about that really didn't like it for whatever reason kept telling me all the things it wasn't. And I'm like, that's not the movie they were trying to make. I mean, over and over, I've heard people complain about things and I'm like, that's not the movie that they seem to be trying to make. So I don't understand how that can be a valid concern that it was, well, it should have had a ton more Wonder Woman in it. Okay. I made that conversation about Iron Man 3 and all I heard was BS and all the reasons why that shouldn't matter. So how is it not okay for Wonder Woman, but it's totally okay for Tony Stark? It's the exact same argument. There's way too much Tony Stark in Iron Man 3, not enough Iron Man. I like Iron Man in my Iron Man movies. There's too much Diana, not enough Wonder Woman in their Wonder Woman movies. You can't have, and these are people that I know have made the exact same argument to me about Iron Man. You can't have different complaints about the same concept.
Well, and, you know, I know we're going to talk about Wonder Woman, too, as, you know, if it's too much or too little. But Wonder Woman is not just about her superpowers. And I don't know how so many people, like, I don't know the comics Amen. To the full extent.
Amen.
But Wonder Woman is about truth. It's about humanity. It's about being honest and authentic. And that is not just when she's in her costume. It's when she's Diana. Like, I don't know how people are missing how Wonder Woman, the entire concept of this entire film is. Because I don't, and maybe it's because I don't have the expectations that I need to see some bombastic superhero movie where there's all of this CGI and there's this giant action sequence and giant action sequence. And I feel like it's MCU overload, and that's what people are expecting. I don't expect that because I know that Wonder Woman is about more than just her powers. Her powers are just an extension for her to handle some of the things that happen and facilitate being the truth seeker, you know? Like, that is what Wonder Woman is about, is truth. And I don't know, that's what the whole damn movie's about.
Her powers are just a tool that she uses. The character herself, the character herself is the power. So the tools, and that's what the first movie taught us, is that it doesn't matter what weapon she's wielding. It doesn't matter what she's doing. It doesn't matter what she can do. It's ultimately her choice to love that makes her more powerful than the person she's fighting.
And to continue jumping off of that, one of the most... How the hell do you miss this moment? Is you had someone who literally wished to be like Diana, and she had the power. She had all of it. But was she Wonder Woman? No, because she isn't. She didn't have truth, and she didn't have humility and bravery and honesty. Like, she didn't have all of those core pieces of what makes Wonder Woman Wonder Woman. That's why she's Barbara. That's why she's Cheetah. You know what I mean?
That's like, why she's Catwoman. Yeah. From Batman Returns.
She wished to have basically all of the powers and the sex appeal and everything that she has, but she didn't become Wonder Woman because it's just not in her core being. Her, you know, she wasn't being herself, and that was what Diana tried telling her, is you're not being authentic to yourself. What are you losing? And it was everything that was good about her, which is what Wonder Woman is about. And so I felt like 180%, and this is the, maybe what, it's
that's
because...
Not, that, you can't be 180%. Let's try it. 100% is the maximum. That's the most you can be.
Yeah, let's tone it down a second.
Let's calm down.
Pump the brakes.
I just feel like
this is
exactly the type of Wonder Woman story we need in this year. And right now, something that's just about... You don't always have to do something. Sometimes you can just say the right things and be kind with your words and show compassion and empathy, and things can be okay.
Screw that. Punch him in the face.
That seems to be what some of the argument is. All right. So the Dreamstone, this pursuit of the Dreamstone as the central plot point. How do you feel about this? Because the entire plot is constructed around this idea that Max Lord... He becomes the Dreamstone. And then what he's doing is he's granting, because some people were confused on this, and I could see kind of how you were. He grants wishes, but he gets to take something in return, because that's what the Dreamstone does. It takes what you love most. So but what he's doing is he's choosing what he takes, right? We all agree on that?
Yes.
Right.
Okay. So what did you think about the Dreamstone pursuit as a central plot point? I mean, I already talked about some. There are some arguments that it's ridiculous, but if you can buy Thanos, I don't see any argument for that. So in terms of just you personally, what do you think about the Dreamstone?
You know, this isn't a plot point that deters me at all, especially we talked about the setting being in the 80s and everything being so extreme. I liked having our villain be just human and someone that has... He just consumes too much power. And... It's just showing what happens when somebody achieves too much, when they dream for too much, they wish for too much, and they don't appreciate what they already have and find other creative solutions to you know, find whatever happiness they have. Like, he ended up figuring out by the end of the movie that all he really cared about was his son. And, like, he just wanted to make his son proud. And if he would have just had an honest conversation with his kid, he would have figured out that his kid already loved him. And it doesn't matter if he's, you know, the world supreme oil owner or whatever. And that... I've seen a lot of people complain about the oil piece too. It's not, that doesn't matter about the oil. Like, that doesn't matter.
Big in the 80s too. I mean,
that was huge in the 80s.
But what matters, I think, most is just that somebody just kept wanting more and more and more. And yes, he hammed it up 100%, not 180.
Thank you. He hammed it up.
But he was still, you know, somebody that I could believe. And I started to like him in the beginning because it's Pedro Pascal and how do you not like him? But then you really start to feel that frustration towards him. And I don't know, I liked seeing the big bad be something that's so on this world.
Wow, I don't even think she answered the question. She answered like three questions with that one, but okay. So
I always do. I'm sorry.
Like, you overshot so far on this. Like, we don't even have to talk about four questions in. But anyways, like, the fact that the stone itself was in the movie was fine. And if you do want to throw it back to a Avengers analog, then I was very happy that the stone itself gets destroyed within minutes of the bad guy having it. And then it's no longer about the stone anymore. It starts becoming about a person, which makes the story a bit better than making the MacGuffin be, you know, still be necessary. We take the MacGuffin out of the whole equation, and we start working with bad guys and good guys, or, you know, highly flawed people and not so flawed people, like whatever you want to look at. I was really happy with the way they took the whole stone idea.
It was intriguing to me because at first I thought, well, this is kind of wonky. Like, it's a movie about wishes. All right. I mean, I saw Aladdin. I'd rather watch that. And then it started getting kind of more interesting, and it did get a little convoluted. And I feel like we probably spent too much time on him getting his wishes and whatnot. Like, that's where, Manda, you and I scores really differs, is because mine has more to do with, I think you could have cut 20 minutes out of this easy. But a lot of it.
Yeah, you're probably right.
A lot of it is just the excess. The movie has a lot of excess. But I really kind of enjoyed, and we'll just segue to it because Amanda already did, like John said, she already got to Pedro Pascal, so you might as well just finish it up.
Yeah.
I liked his hamming it up. I just really felt, because to me, the whole time I'm watching it, I'm thinking, this is a movie that's supposed to be as if it were a movie I was watching in the 80s. And that felt very, very accurate to me, and how hammy he went and how cheesy, how just right to the line of camp he went. At the very end, he kind of jumps over it a few times. That whole when he's in the circle screaming at the gods might have been a little too far. I agree. But for most of the movie, you know, I think he's doing a really good job of playing that cheesy TV salesman that just wants to be the success that he's never been, and he's desperate to attain it. And it really worked for me. I thought Pedro Pascal did a good job with that. Not great, but good.
You know, his story was actually something that was very real and very, very relatable to real world. I mean, in the conversations I've had talking about this movie, I was reminded about, there's a true crime documentary called All the Queen's Horses, which is about a woman who works in a small town in like Tennessee or Alabama or something.
It's Illinois.
And
she works
it's Illinois. It's like it Illinois? Two counties over from us.
All right, yeah. So it's Illinois.
Manda's actually met her.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So she's working for the city, but she ends up embezzling so much money that she has something to the tune of $53 million worth of horses. And if you're thinking about abstract, you're a person that would be like, okay, you know what? If I were to steal this kind of money, I could steal $3-4 million and go off and hide and enjoy my retirement for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. But this woman stole $53 million. And what ends up happening to them is that they become so addicted to that feeling that it ends up snowballing into this whole other world, because they keep on thinking, well, I can just keep getting away with it. And that's what it felt like when Pedro Pascal was going through his character move. It was like somebody who was doing that, where it became something small, and he thought it was something small, but as soon as it started becoming more and more easier to obtain, he just swallowed everything up greedily.
Yeah, again, it's the humanity piece that I think it grounds it for, at least for me, and it sounds like it grounded it for you. It's something where, yeah, I could see somebody who's been poor and, you know, he was rich and then he reached poverty and, you know, he's having a rough go of it, and he just wants to, he has an idea of what success looks like and what makes his child happy. And I think it was also a great father-son story, like a tragic father-son story.
Oh, we are on different planes on that.
Yeah.
One.
That's not good either.
Did not work for me at all. I thought,
it was so sad. That kid was not great. Like, for but the story itself, it was sad, but it was also like the extreme bad version of what would a parent do to make their child happy. And
no. Yeah, it would be better if it felt anything but forced. That part totally did not work for me.
Yeah.
I think the idea works for me. Like, I get the idea, and I think the idea works. I think the performance, especially from the kid, hurt that.
Yep.
I can agree with that. He was not
what a terrible
excellent
child actor. He needs to be fired.
Oh, be nice.
Stop. What? No, he ruined the movie.
Stop. Don't, you might listen to this poor kid. Keep trying. Keep hey, reaching kid, for the stuff.
You suck.
He's a child. Don't you dare. He's a child.
What?
He's attacking. What just He's happened? Bullying a youth.
I feel good about myself at the moment.
I
don't feel like a loser.
You know what'll make you feel better? Talking about Diana sexually assaulting a random dude.
Yes, please.
Dude, John wants to be the random dude.
Let's talk about bringing... Who wouldn't want to be that guy?
I do. Yeah.
You know what I really love about that character is that his name is his in the credits is Handsome Man. Really? Handsome Man is where we're going to go? Like, you couldn't even give him a name like Stu or like he live like a Stu or Kyle. He looked like, you know, he could live like a Kyle as well. He had to be Handsome Man. We couldn't make him like, I don't know, George or anything. Yeah. Nope. Handsome Man. Like, I'm not really complaining about the movie. Just I'm complaining about the thought put into this poor guy's freaking career.
Again, movie made in the 80s. You know what in the 80s it'd be if it was a woman? Bikini Girl. Or something like that. So I think
and it's that's
fair,
okay.
Fair turn.
Fair I turn. Need to be able to look up in the credits and be like, oh, who's Bikini Girl number 3?
You know which number they are.
Yes, because you can count them on the screen left to right.
I
like a book.
Appreciate your hypocritical nature. So let's talk about Chris Pine's Steve being back through Diana's wishing, which I thought was a beautiful scene. But I don't quite understand why they chose to have him inhabit another guy's body. Therefore, I mean, let's be fair. If this were reversed, it would be quite the outrage because basically she humps this dude without the actual body owner's consent. So that's a whole thing I don't want to get into. I'm just saying.
And let's also talk about the fact that she has all the power because she's a super person and she can overpower anybody she feels like. So even then, yes, it's a weird kind of rapey thing about it.
It's very uncomfortable in that respect, but we're going to try and skim past it if you can. But I'm not going to lie, it icked me out a couple times.
I'm diving in deep.
And then at the end, they just, like, she's just like, oh, hello, oh, your outfit's so cute. Like, nothing happened.
Yeah,
like,
just looking at him.
When you were having
sexy.
Sex with this man, you looked into his eyes.
All she saw was Steve.
She says that, but she's still new. She knows when the penis is different.
She sexed him better than he's ever been sexed.
It's like 40 years between times. I mean, would she really know the difference?
Honestly, who do you think is the real victim here? The man who had sex with Wonder Woman and doesn't get to remember it?
Yes, he's the victim.
Yes.
Yeah. No, don't get me wrong. I wouldn't go to the cops. I'd just be very happy about it myself. But, you know, I don't make judgments for other people. I'm just saying, if this were reversed, it would be a huge thing. It would be a quite the outrage.
For sure. Yeah, definitely. Well,
it wasn't that big of a thing.
Well, how do you know?
I don't know that a lot of people caught on to how weird that concept is.
You're such a child. Such a child.
She was able to walk away from it. It can't be that big of a thing.
Here's my question.
Oh my God.
Here's
okay,
my question.
I get it.
Here's my question. Why would you even do that? Because I can't see how you don't see that as just in today's climate, uncomfortable to at least for many people. Why wouldn't you just make it he comes back? Poof. It was a wish for crying out loud. Why do you have to put it in a person's body? That doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, because, like, I understand where you're coming from. However, there's a couple of, like, ideas here that come to mind, which is, one, if he just materializes out of nowhere, then he dematerializes, and it's even like he's dying all over again. So, poof, like, he went up in a ball of flames before, he's going to go up in a ball of flames again. So, we don't really, that's too much.
That's too much, but putting this random strangio in God knows violence's way every freaking other turn. She's going, taking him to the desert, and he's flipping around on trucks. That's not Chris Pine, that's that dude.
God, I sure hope he doesn't have a girlfriend.
Yeah, right?
Hey, she's not good enough for him. Let's just face that. But the other flip side of it is that any other way to bring him back would ultimately, there's no non-hokey way of bringing him back is what the point is.
I'm just saying it seems to me like that would be less problematic after the fact. Because if you really stop and you look back at it and you think about it, Diana was totally cool putting this innocent man at risk day in and day out, as well as kind of had her way with him. And he had no agreement to this or consent in any way to shape or form. It just feels like a weird plot hole. Not a hole. I mean, it's there. The plot works.
It's not a plot hole. it's just a weird plot point.
Yes, it's a very odd plot point.
It's the opposite of a hole. It's a point.
And we're watching the whole Raiders thing, and I'm like, that's not Chris Pine. That's that dude that's basically going to get shot by oil Arabs. I'm like, this is not cool. It's not cool. Ah. But everybody loves Chris Pine. So I guess, you know, I digress. What did you feel about having Chris Pine back and having her be able to say goodbye to him again?
This was one of the plot points where I was a little bothered by it because I didn't like the idea of bringing Chris Pine back this way and having him in the story or making him as nearly as important as it seemed like he was. It was one of those things that I had to get past just because I was like, okay, why are we redoing this? It was just like a part of the story last movie. We could have done this kind of thing for the third movie, so it makes more like there's more time in between it. I don't know. It's something that I had to be okay with. And as far as him inhabiting another dude's body, you can think of a billion and one ways to bring him back. All of them would be hokey. So why not just go with this way?
Okay.
I don't think there's a really good answer to what the best method to bring him back is. I honestly didn't, when I watched the trailers, I was like, how are they going to bring him back with any logical sense? Fair, they don't. It just happens. But on the other hand, he is very infectious. And I, you know, as somebody who had a lot of complaints of their relationship in the first movie, I appreciated that there was time spent to elaborate on her feelings for him. Because to me, it just felt like, oh, you just met this dude and now you're just like absolutely in love with him. He's the one and only. You're never going to love anybody. Okay.
Chris Pine. He's pretty amazing.
True. But when I got to this movie, there was something about their chemistry and their relationship that I just felt like wasn't as prominent in the first one because we didn't spend as much time focusing on their relationship because they wanted to make a bombastic superhero movie, not one that has a lot of romance-y glam. But again, this is the 80s. 80s is about love, blah, blah, blah.
I think you're wrong about the first movie.
Yeah, you're wrong about the 80s.
There's some of the best movies in the 80s were romance movies.
Sure. Keep telling yourself that. I grew up there. It was not about love. It was about cocaine and
okay, there's also cocaine.
Fast cars and Phil Collins.
You're right.
It was like cocaine and getting up in there. Those are the only two options we had.
But there was something about it that I just appreciated. I do feel like he was made a very central character, and that was something I didn't expect in terms of saving this whole Dreamstone thing. Like, he was very, very integral to it in terms of, you know, motivating her and all of that. But I also appreciated that she got the chance to say goodbye and she had to make the choice to move on, which is something that's very, very hard to do. And she had to do it for all the right reasons at all the wrong times. And she had to say goodbye to someone she cared about for the greater good, which is something that I kind of hate. Like, can we stop making women have to choose between love and...
No, every superhero does. It's not a sex thing.
Yeah, it's not a sex thing.
It just, I don't like it. And so I just really wish that there was
Steve
some
Rogers
other...
had to give it up.
Huh?
Steve Rogers had to give it up.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so.
We're awful very concerned apparently that Amanda can talk for 27 minutes about all the things that she doesn't like about this, but no concern about Handsome Man, who didn't get to say goodbye to his family at all.
He came back.
Barely. He was flipping around in a tank. He was flying around and all this other thing. He's on a jet that he can't fly. He could have been shot down by the Marines.
They didn't give me a lot of time to care about his character. All I know is he's an engineer, okay? And he is very disorganized. That's all I know about
him. I'm just saying, you're going on a dissertation on Chris Pine and this poor guy. He's having to go around the... He can't even remember that he had a dalliance with Wonder Woman, for crying out loud. That's just a crime of the century.
Poor man. Poor man.
Poor handsome man.
Poor handsome man with the terrible pants. God.
Hey, those are Zee Cavaricci's. Those were the shit back in the day.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So
I appreciate that Gal Gadot's like, no, this is all bad. Like, she recognizes the fashion is just, this is not it, honey.
Yeah, I dug that. I dug the scarf, too. That was a good look. Mm-hmm. And I really, really liked the end when she's just looking at the handsome man like, I made you look good. Yep, sure did. Totally violated you. All right, so Kristen Wiig, or Wiig, however you want to say it, Barbara Minerva slash Cheetah. Now, this character is pretty reminiscent of, you know, Catwoman from Batman Returns. It's the exact same character. Very mousy, very unconfident. And then through a turnabout and some wishes, ends up being like Wonder Woman in many respects, except she looks like a cat, which I don't recall Wonder Woman looking like a cat. So that was an odd choice. But, you know, she had the shoes, so I get it. John, what are your thoughts on Barbara slash Cheetah?
My thoughts are more about Kristen Wiig, honestly, on this whole lineup, because like Kristen, this is something we've never seen Kristen Wiig do before in any sort of degree or any sort of seriousness, and she sold that character so well. Mm-hmm. When she was mousy, she looked mousy. When she was getting her power up, and she just started like owning the clothes, the skin that she wore, everything was just a sign of power, and it was really awesome to watch her character change that way. As far as the character itself, it's just another like reiteration of what we said about Maxwell Lord's character. She's a very normal person who gets a taste of what it feels like to not feel like a loser anymore. And instead of stopping at a certain point and being like, I'm okay right here, she takes it to the furthest degree she possibly can to turn herself into a monster. So I thought that, again, it's another effective way of showing a villain that's very human in a lot of ways.
And she doesn't renounce her wish. So she is still Cheetah technically at the end of the movie, even though it's left kind of
up in the air.
Up in the air, yeah. But she does not renounce her wish.
Yeah, we don't ever see her renounce it, which I was actually, I was very proud of DC for going all the way to cat form with her, because, and I didn't know how they were going to do that, but because there's two different forms of Cheetah in the comics, which one of them is a cheesy woman running around in a cat suit. And then again, like that, you can really say that's really more so a Catwoman only different. Mm-hmm. Whereas the version of her that's an anamorphic cat that is a superpowered cat person is the much more dangerous and kind of like, she's supposed to be kind of like if you had Daredevil but scratchy is what her character is. So it's very cool.
And this looks much better than the entirety of the actual movie Cats, which is odd.
100%. Yes, absolutely.
Yes, absolutely.
Which is sad. It's just, oh God, I'm getting terrible flashbacks to when we had to watch that for Patreon. Yeah. I liked her. I really, really was surprised by Kristen Wiig's performance, because I've always seen her as being so funny and like cute. And I like the word mousy that John used. She has always done well with that. But I did not know how she would handle, you know, if I would believe her as being this like real serious badass competing with Gal Gadot. Like, I just didn't know. And Wonder Woman as a character as a whole. And I was really impressed by it. Even like the Cheetah looked way worse in the trailers. Granted, it doesn't look awesome, but it looked worse in the trailers, I thought. Well, so I was like, oh, okay, that's at least a little bit relieving.
Yeah, it wasn't awful. And I did like their fight. Their fight was really well done, because for the most part, I think almost the entirety of the fight, Wonder Woman's only doing defensive moves. I didn't see her really being on the offense except when she's being attacked. So it's still, again, mostly defensive. So she's just reacting. She's trying not to harm Barbara the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was sad. You could understand at least why, like what got her character there, because she really was fine being Cheetah in some form and not being malicious necessarily, until it got to the point where Diana wanted to do something that she didn't, where it was basically an attack on her. You know, you can't take this away from me. I finally have this and you want to rip it away from me. And then, of course, as she got some power and some, which is kind of like a central theme, as that power grew, it just kind of consumed her and she wanted more and she wanted more. And that's just how greed works. And so I liked her character.
Yeah, same here. I was actually pleasantly surprised, because I didn't know how she would do. And I thought she did a very strong dramatic work, especially at the end. Like, I really felt for her. And you know, her whole character's arc. And I didn't think the cheetah design was fantastic, but it was, having just watched Cats, I felt like I had gone forward 20 years in development. So, my God. My God. And thank God she didn't have that cat butthole. We didn't have that. So that was important.
That would have been great.
So, Gal Gadot, Wonder Woman, herself, or Diana herself, which, you know, I agree with you guys when you were talking earlier. Contrary to Iron Man, my Iron Man argument, I don't enjoy Tony Stark as much as I enjoy Iron Man. When I'm watching an Iron Man movie, I like to see Iron Man stuff. But to me, Wonder Woman is Diana. They are the same character. The only difference is occasionally she's got an outfit on. That's really the only difference to me. So I didn't have a problem with the quote-unquote lack of Wonder Woman because I thought we had some great scenes throughout. But regardless, how did you feel about Gal Gadot's Wonder Woman arc here? Were you happy with it? Amanda, you said you liked this movie better than the first one, which is kind of you're in the minority in that one. So why so much?
Definitely in the minority. Yeah. I was in the minority with having issues with the first one anyway. I still have some problems with it. I know you guys brought up that like other superheroes have had to sacrifice, but I don't think in the same way where she literally had to choose to kill him again. And that, I mean, despite the fact that I don't like it, I also understand how heartbreaking that would be for her to have to do again. And so they added a heightened level of emotion throughout this. And the romance was very real because you got to see her grow with him. And, you know, they spent a lot of time together in this compared to the first one. And so that made their relationship feel more real. And it made that decision even harder when it came to it. But again, she always has to do what's best for the greater good. And I appreciate that about Wonder Woman. I also loved that she doesn't always have to resort to fighting and like just being aggressive in general. Like, I get she's a superhero. She did awesome stuff, though. She swung a lasso from a lightning bolt.
Oh my
God.
How
is that not cool?
That was like, so cool. That was so reminiscent of him flying, of Christopher Reeve flying in Superman. And to me, I mean, I know some people were online complaining that Wonder Woman can't do that. I don't know if she can or she can't. I don't care. That was fantastic. Like, I thought that was just brilliant, how they used the lasso to propel her forward, and she's riding the lightning. It's a superhero movie about a god. What are you going to tell me that it's not real? Shut up. It's amazing. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, no, that aspect of it all I thought was pretty awesome. Like, with the whole her flying, which there are versions of her in the comics that fly. And then, you know, if you're going to have her fly, then what difference does it make? She catches the lightning bolt or not? She's this daughter of Zeus. Go eat a... Am I going to finish that sentence? I'm not going to finish the sentence.
Go eat a lightning bolt.
Yeah, right. Go eat a lightning bolt. People, I think a lot of people just want to complain about this, yeah, this movie. I'm starting to really get that vibe.
I agree.
She has super strength. You know, we see her strong. We see her even when she starts to become weaker, which is a key point to this entire plot working, is that she does become weakened. We see that. So we've seen the regression of her powers in terms of what she's physically able to do. But again, that's not all Wonder Woman is. She is literally the goddess of truth. And so it makes sense that she would use words and she would use truth to persuade people to also share their truth and be honest with themselves about their wishes. And I just really loved how authentic and humane it felt. Like, that is a superhero to me. She did something that you can't just do with power. She did something that very few people can do that aren't superheroes.
And basically, the way that I'm understanding it, like at the end, I mean, he's basically standing on that little portal. That's where it's super 80s cheesy, where it's flashing colored lights and he's getting super maniacal. And she's got the lasso around him, which I thought was a really cool reveal. And she's talking through him, through the satellites, through the internet, or whatever you want to call it. And that's how she's speaking to the world. Did you guys like that aspect where she basically ended the movie with a conversation and not some huge CGI battle?
I thought that was fine as far as we had the CGI battle when she was fighting Cheetah. To have it any further than that, it would be even more nonsensical than the ending when we got, because Maxwell Lord, all he can do is be a man who just happens to be able to, what's he going to do? Like, I want you to wish to kick my ass. And for that, I'm going to take your lasso from you now. Like, is that how it's going to work? No.
Right. There's not much that she doesn't want to harm him. And she knows that if they do battle, that's what it's going to be. But it's not all about him. It's about the people as a whole. It's about society. And because it doesn't come down to just this man. This chaos didn't stem from just one dude. It stemmed from the entire world mm-hmm. being consumed by greed and power. And only Wonder Woman. Yeah, and themselves. And only Wonder Woman could talk somebody out of getting everything that they could have ever wanted. And talking to them about saving the world themselves. She didn't have to do it herself because she was able to get people to realize what they were doing and the selfish act of it, and made them, they had to want the world to survive for them to believe what she was saying. And they did, and they renounced their wishes.
I love that so many people were renouncing their wishes. I thought that was a beautiful moment. And, you know, even Handsome Man probably renounced his desire to press charges. I mean, just everything felt covered across the board. And I got to say, I mean, I don't know if there's a better choice for Wonder Woman out there. I mean, maybe there is, but I can't picture anyone better than Gal Gadot, and just her presentation, her representation, just how genuinely heartfelt her performance always is in these movies is really amazing to me. Like, legitimately amazing.
She brought me to tears.
For me, the thing is that when I was actually talking about this over the weekend, I remember when they originally cast her, I was like, what, the skinny chick from Hot to the Fast and Furious right? movie? She's going to be freaking Wonder Woman? This is bullshit. This is no way she's going to be. And now I can't see anybody else doing it. I would never have bought her as Wonder Woman before, and now I can't see it. And I think that's great. As far as like my feelings as far as for her storyline, this is where I get into the areas that frustrated me, and I felt were ultimately very tropey. The way that, you know, she made the wish, and then unknowing that what she had in her hand, she made the wish, and she started losing her strength and power. I was just annoyed by that, not because they used it, because it's such a superhero trope, especially for the second movie. Mm-hmm. All right, we got the superhero,
Spider-Man.
We got to find a reason to take away their power. Here we go. Where they could have done. And like, and we've talked about how Wonder Woman is a character that, like, her strength, her abilities, her, you know, those are all tools she uses, but her strength is actually and her power actually comes from who she is. They could have found a way to take that away from her versus, okay, that must be a really strong lock because she had to pull on it four times. You know, or she takes a bullet to the chest or a shoulder and it doesn't bounce off of her. These are all things that, like, I found myself groaning at a little here and a little there just because I'm just so tired of this being used in superhero movies. Change who the person is, take away their power, I'm a little tired of. You know what I mean?
Yep, absolutely. As soon as she started doing that, I'm like, oh, so it's Spider-Man 2?
Yeah.
And a million other. I mean, it usually is the second movie. You're right. Where they're like, well, we're going to reduce their superpoweredness.
Right.
And, you know, I got it. And it works. I mean, it's not. See, that's the thing. Like, it doesn't not work in the story. It worked for the story. It's just one that it's a trope that we're all tired of. That's all.
Right.
That's all.
Yeah. I can't imagine them trying to do, like, my idea would be like change who she is, or start changing who she is on the fundamental side as opposed to her power side. You know,
she's
like
so bitter from losing Steve and not being able to be Wonder Woman or something like that, where it affects her character. That seems to me like it'd be easier to pull off with less tropiness, cliche.
Then again, you fall into the trap of Steve has to mansplain to her every 5 minutes why she needs to go kick somebody's ass or save the world, and
right.
that's a different trope we fall into. And not only that, but that's not very friendly to, you know, giving women agency either. So it's a tough line to walk.
And let me ask you, this is the one where I brought it up a couple times, so I'm going to ask you because I know, John, you know the comics probably better than Amanda and I do. Do we all agree on that?
Oh yeah.
I have a knowledge of Wonder Woman, not as deep as I'd like it to. Ha!
Shame on you.
Oh, my God.
Shame.
You and me both, buddy.
Sorry, I thought that was funny where I was going with it. Anyhow, I don't have as much of a knowledge as I'd like to have on Wonder Woman, but I do have a love and appreciation for her.
It's not as deep as Handsome Man's. All right, yeah. So what is what would you say to the people that say that there simply isn't enough Wonder Woman in this Wonder Woman movie? Do you think that's fair, or even based on the comics, that's kind of silly?
I'm not going to say whether it's based off the comics or not, what the answer to that is. To the stage of what this movie is, if you look at Gal Gadot and you look at her acting or as Diana, and you're not seeing Wonder Woman, that's more of a you problem than it is a movie problem.
Excellent. That's really all I needed to hear. Okay. The action scenes, including the mall opening, the young Diana opening, and the Raiders homage. And we kind of talked about that film's final choice. So let's talk about the action scenes. Which ones really stood out for you the most? You know, some people are saying there's not enough action in this. I think there's a lot of action in this, so I don't have a problem with that. But, you know, you might feel differently. I love the opening mall scene. I thought that was great.
Mm.
I really dug the opening young Diana scene, where it kind of taught her at a young age that you can't take shortcuts, which is what the whole theme of the movie is like, you wishes are shortcuts, you know, connect the dots. So
yeah, this is another one of those things where people aren't paying attention, because it's like, what was this? I've heard so many people say, like, that whole 5 minutes was not even part of, like, there's pointless. Like, did you not actually hear her say exactly what's
like, how dense do you have to be to not understand and connect how that opening connects to the rest of it?
Like, she said the exact same words 2 hours later. Is that the problem? Was it 2 hours? Your attention span was so far gone. You're like, it's 2 hours.
Thank you. God, it was so irritating. I actually had this argument with a friend, and I want to unfriend them. I just do. I'm like, the fact that you can't even pay attention, that this was a pivotal part of the movie and it was absolutely necessary. I don't understand why you,
Ow.
But it was a cool moment. I love that whole, like, she was kicking ass, and it wasn't, she didn't take a shortcut because of she was cheating. She was being resourceful, really.
She was being creative, mm-hmm. but it changes the winning of it is about somebody who did, you know, is like the ultimate greatness, and like truth is everything to this community. And so if you do anything that defeats that, then you're not being true to yourself and to others, and like,
there's no honor. There's no honor in winning that.
The principle of the movie.
Hey, you know, my other response to this is that everybody else had a full like 6 feet on her when she was doing this whole thing, and she was able to not only keep up with them, but, you know, get ahead of them for the majority of that whole race. Yeah. Good for her. She actually won.
Yeah.
Good you know,
job. He kicked yeah. ass. You really got robbed. I'm telling you right now. If they got 9-1-1,
she has short legs. Syria. And everything. There's no way that if that were a real thing, she would have had to have taken a nap halfway through, you know, gotten a baba or something, you know.
Snack.
Also, that little slide chute was like sized just for her. So it's like they were trying to tempt her with the potential, because nobody else was going to slide down that thing.
That's how you get them right there. Yeah. Let's see if she'll take the bait. She sure did. Cheater.
Right.
And I'm not arguing, like, I do believe that's ridiculous. You know, she was being creative and resourceful, and she was trying to find a solution, and it worked. But to be fair, she also didn't shoot her arrow through that one little circle.
Mm-hmm. And that's the
she
rules
never
of the
did
game.
It. Right. Yeah, and that's exactly. And so it's not necessarily about what she did to find her way back. It's about what did she miss and not do according to the rules of the game. So,
and I loved the mall scene. I just thought that was really 80s fun, and especially that little wink she gives.
That was my favorite part.
Oh my
part.
God. How does that not melt your heart and just go,
the little girl. Oh my God. And she like, she pushes her back. She slides her back. And the little girl's giggling the whole time until she lands in teddy bears. I was like, oh my God, this is like, seriously, this is the coolest Wonder Woman moment. It melted my whole entire heart.
What I really appreciated as far as the mall scene goes, and some of the other stuff that she was doing, she wasn't necessarily out in the open doing it, which if you look at the rest of the DC Universe movies, she's not supposed to be known up until finally BVS or even Justice League happens. So, because she's supposed to be still in the shadows, and they did a very good job as far as more or less keeping her in those shadows for the majority of the story.
Agreed. And another thing I really enjoy, you know, when I was alluding to earlier, there's a scene that I missed, was the invisible jet scene. I didn't see where she created it. You know, I did it once with a coffee cup, but I lost it. You know, that whole scene, I didn't see part of it because I was getting popcorn. And so when I came back into the theater, it was just when they had taken off and they were in fireworks and it was an IMAX screen. And I tell you, I couldn't even move. I was so enraptured and entranced with that whole scene. I just thought it looked very romantic, very magical. It just felt like, I just felt powerful. And I know some people don't like the invisible jet scene. Well, suck it. When Wonder Woman had an invisible jet, I don't know what to tell you. I thought that was an interesting way to do it. And she's a god, so she's doing god stuff. But to me, it was less about the jet and more about her having that moment with Steve, or Handsome Man, in the jet and amongst the fireworks and the clouds, and actually getting a feel for how flying will work for her later. And I thought that was fantastic. It's one of my favorite
also
parts.
Can we talk about how she just she lives in DC, but just happens to forget about the 4th of July?
She doesn't care about stuff like that, right? I hope.
Forget that. You're off
I don't
work.
Know.
How do you not know?
She's so stuck in the whole Steve moment. She just is.
She is. She is. It was just funny
out.
To me.
She spaced it
but
out.
But it was really cool. And it's also one of those things where it's like, man, especially once they went above the clouds and you see the fireworks lighting up the clouds, it was like, man, I've never even thought about that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. What it looks like to be above the fireworks. We're always trying so hard to look at them from below. And I thought it was just really special.
Yeah.
I thought they did a really good job as far as showing what that looks like, because I've actually flown my drones through firework display once, mm-hmm. just once and only once. I don't think I'm going to do it again because it is kind of scary way to lose $600 worth of equipment.
Right? I was going to say, doesn't it explode or something?
Yeah. Only if it gets hit.
It can. If it gets hit. But it does look awesome when you're doing it.
It sounds very cool. It sounds pretty fantastic. And the last thing I want to mention is the Raiders homage. What I meant by that is that truck chase. If you've never seen Raiders of the Lost Ark, it is very much a Wonder Woman take on the Raiders truck chase. I don't know if Patty Jenkins wants to admit it or not. I mean, I'm sure there's some interview where she's probably talked about it, but it's totally an homage. I just don't know how you can say it's not. And I loved it. I did love it.
Speaking of homages, we have to mention that after credits, Linda Carter.
Asteria. Moment. Yep. I was going to mention that in a second, but you jumped right to it. So let's get to it.
Sorry, I'm just on top of it.
No, that's fine. Were you guys happy to see her there? And would you want to see her in more? Or was this just a nice little wish fulfillment for fans?
It felt like it was passing over the rope to me. Like, that's what it felt like to me. And trying to celebrate Linda Carter, and also, like, it tripped me out because I really thought it was Gal Gadot for a minute. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what is she doing? And then I was like, wait a second, that's not her. And when I saw her turn around, I was like, oh, that's really cool that they did that. But I don't know if the intention is to bring her back, and like, because that would just be weird. I don't know the comics.
Wonder Woman going against the original Wonder Woman going against the new Wonder Woman.
Or like maybe they team up or something, but I don't know if that's ever been done before in any, I mean, it's your movie. You can do whatever the hell you want. But yeah. I don't know how it would play out. And I'm sure people would be responsive to it because they love Linda Carter. But
I think it'd be distracting to me personally.
Me too. I liked that it was just a really sweet moment at the end after credits scene.
It was a great nod to the character, and I liked that a lot. Actually, but the thing that I thought was funniest about it was that when she showed up on screen, my wife goes, is that CGI? And I'm like, nope, that's Linda Carter. And she goes, is that Linda Carter right now? Or is that Linda Carter from, like, I'm sure there might be a little bit of Vaseline on the lens, Courtney.
No, she's just had some work done.
That doesn't look like there's Vaseline on the lens. I was like, well, that's what Linda Carter looks like. And she goes, that's not fair.
Lord, I don't know what that means. What's not fair about it? I thought it was a great moment.
She's still a wildly beautiful woman.
She is. Yeah.
In her 60s. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
She was actually, you know, as funny as she was in the fandom or whatever premiere for Wonder Woman 1984. Uh-huh. And this was top secret. Like, this apparently wasn't even sent out to screeners. So people that screened the movie early didn't even get the post-credits scene. He had to go to theaters or watch it on HBO Max to see it. And that is a fun surprise. And even though that they had her there, nobody even thought that she would be in the movie at some point. They just thought they were just paying homage to 80th anniversary of Wonder Woman. And then Linda Carter pops up as TV's original, and you know, people went wild, which why wouldn't you? Linda Carter's a legend in that respect.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know about the anniversary. That's really cool.
Mm-hmm. I hope I got the number right. I think it was 80. So
yeah, don't screw that up.
Well, it's to the internet now. Send it to the internets. That's all I can say about that.
It's out. It's done.
It is done. Now, would you want to see Cheetah come back? Or what do you guys want to see in Wonder Woman 3, which has been greenlit? Patty Jenkins is coming back. They put it on the fast track, so you don't have to worry about another movie coming. It is happening. Is there anything specific you guys want to see?
Hold on. Before we get into this, I have a question for you guys regarding Cheetah. So this is the only thing that I've wondered. There's her wish became fulfilled after when she was with him, with Pedro Pascal's mm-hmm. character. If he renounces his wish, which he did, does that not renounce all of the other wishes, including hers?
It renounces every wish that he has been in direct contact to, I believe.
He didn't do her wish. She did. She got the wish from the
Rock. Oh, you're right. You're right. No, I just mixed up the timeline. You're right. Okay. Well, all right. I'm good.
He didn't. He did the additional wish that turned her into the actual Apex Predator thing. That's what he did. But the initial wish where she was just a woman who had superpowers.
Wanted to be like her, Wonder Woman.
So she won't be Cheetah then. She'll just be Wonder Woman ripoff.
She was already wearing the cat stuff before she got to turn into a cat. So it's possible she will stick to a cat motif.
Maybe just this is where the actual outfit will come into play as opposed to the actual. Because she reverted back to human form because Pedro Pascal's wish is stopped. But I think she still has the powers, yes. But that's left much up in the air.
Right.
So we'll find out. So do you guys want her to come back? What do you want? Wonder Woman 3, what do you want? I'm not supposed to be in a current time frame, though. I do know that.
I don't know what I want. I want more Gal Gadot. I want more Wonder Woman. I want more of that kind of storytelling. And I want more of being able to take someone to a theater who is of a different gender and sit there and say, this is the kind of experience I get at every single movie. Here you go. You get to have it now. And be happy for that person. I know what I don't want, which is I don't want any more Steve Trevor.
Some people are arguing that it's like a requirement. I don't think so. I think you can absolutely make Wonder Woman without Steve, without Chris Pine.
You have to.
Well, I mean, you do have to, but I think that it works with or without him. Yes, it was nice to see the two of them together, but Wonder Woman is Wonder Woman. Like, Gal Gadot is going to be just as amazing as Wonder Woman without the man by her side.
She did fine in BVS and she did fine in Justice League without Steve Trevor.
True, true.
It's just the nature of superheroes. I mean, people like Spider-Man, you want MJ. Iron Man, you want Pepper Potts. You know, Captain America, you want Peggy. I think that's just the thing that happens when people love the characters. And Chris Pine is pretty freaking fantastic and charismatic.
He's charming.
Do a cameo, a flashback, a thought or something to some mission we didn't see when they were in World War One or something. That's if you have to do something with Steve Trevor. But otherwise, I'm with John. I don't want him in my next movie. I love him. I want another freaking Star Trek movie or something with him, but that's it.
I want a much more Wonder Woman focused story. Like, about, I know that he is a part of her story, but he was also very invested in the main movie. So, like, I want, yes, she has those feelings and, you know, maybe remembers him, but I want a little less, you know, how we want a little less Iron Man in our Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
I want a little less Steve in my Wonder Woman, and I just want to see her do awesome things and save the world. And if that means she has to go against Cheetah again, I'm cool with that because Kristen Wiig did a good job. And I'd be curious to see if it turned into a full blown battle, you know, how that would turn out and shake out.
Oof. Well, we'll be finding out in a couple of years, but I hope everybody is having a wonderful time. It might be 2021 when you're listening to this. I don't know, but either way, have a wonderful new year. Next week, we will actually be back with just a Cobra Kai Season 3 podcast because we did see it early. It'll be available on release day, January 1st, on Patreon, and we'll be back the following Monday for everybody else in the feed. So if you want to go to patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider, you can get it early, but it's definitely coming out in the next week. So looking forward to that, and then the week after, we'll be doing our Ho Awards. I'm so excited. Doesn't sound like Wonder Woman's going to be on anybody's list, but what are you going to do?
On mine.
Okay, guys, that's going to do it. So thank you so much for listening. Remember, you can find everything at thehollywoodoutsider.com. We're available in your favorite podcast app. Just hit subscribe. And remember, as you watch movies in 2021, whether it be in theaters or comfortably on your couch, buy popcorn. All right, are you guys ready to do this? So, John, you both can get back to vacation, and I can go
that'd be great.
To work. Okay. Well, don't be a dick. I rewatched it on HBO Max. That was the one advantage. And I actually got to see the invisible jet scene because I had to get a refill, because for once they were allowing refills on popcorn and I wanted more popcorn. So I missed the invisible jet scene. That's a big spoiler, isn't it? Shoot.
Yes.